Hi, everybody. I'm Tim Warner, your teacher for the Bereans Bible Institute. We're in module number 6, lesson 23. Last time we talked about Jesus' trial before the Sanhedrin and what a farce that really was. Today we'd like to get into Jesus' trial before the Roman officials. As I mentioned last time, the Jews had jurisdiction over their religious practices and enforcing their religious practices and so forth under the Roman rule, but they could not put anyone to death. So what we see now is that after Jesus was sentenced to death by the Jewish Sanhedrin, that is the chief priests and the Pharisees that formed that council, they had to take him before Roman officials to get them to actually decree that Christ was to be crucified. So let's pick up the narrative in Luke chapter 23. We're going to read verses 1 through 6. All right. Then the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ a king." Now, this is interesting because the charges that they are bringing against Jesus here was twofold, according to Luke's account, and that is forbidding the people to pay taxes to Caesar and claiming to be the king of Israel, the king of the Jews. Now, one of those charges is true. The other charge is not true. Jesus did not ever forbid the paying of taxes to Caesar. In fact, when he was questioned on that subject at one point, as the religious leaders were trying to trip him up, they asked him, you know, is it lawful to pay tribute to Caesar or not? And Jesus answered their question by asking them a question. And he said, "Show me a coin." And so they showed him a Roman coin, which was the currency at the time. And he says, "Whose inscription is that?" And they said, "Caesar's." And so Jesus said, "Give to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and give to God the things that are God's." So he very craftily actually permitted or encouraged the paying of taxes to Caesar. He did not forbid that at all. In fact, just the opposite was true. So this was a blatant lie on their part about Jesus while they were accusing him to the Roman officials. But let's look at the second part of it, and that is, the second charge is that he was claiming to be a king, and of course that was seen as an affront to Caesar himself. Verse 3, "Then Pilate asked him, saying, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' He answered him and said, 'It is as you say.'" That is, he was affirming that he was the king of the Jews. "So Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowd, 'I find no fault in this man.'" Pilate didn't think that the charge, even Jesus admitting that he was a king of the Jews, was a direct affront to the Roman authority or to Caesar himself, as the Jews were trying to accuse him of. So he goes on, it says, "But they were the more fierce, saying, 'He stirs up the people, teaching things throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place.'" So now they're talking about his teaching. Now, before we get into looking more deeply into the charges being brought against Jesus, I think we need to clarify who this man was, that the Roman official who they were bringing Jesus before to condemn him to death. I want you to take your Bibles and go, keep your finger here, we're coming back. But let's go to Luke chapter 3 for just a moment. verse 1. In Luke 3, 1, Luke records the beginning of John the Baptist's ministry when he began to preach and teach, which was about 4 years prior to the incident that we just read about. And it says, "Now in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar," so we know who the emperor was, that was Tiberius, "Pontius Pilate being governor of Judea." Now, Judea is, if you look at the land of Israel, at the time. Judea was the lower southern portion of it. It was the part where Jerusalem was. And then you had above that, you had Samaria. And then above that, you had Galilee. So Luke, when he's introducing this in chapter 3, he's telling us who the different governors were, Roman officials were, that were overseeing the nation of Israel at the time. So he says, all right, you've got Tiberius Caesar in Rome. He's the emperor. Then under him, over the area of Judea, you had Pontius Pilate, and he's the one that they accused Jesus before that we just read about. But also notice that it says Herod, being tetrarch of Galilee, his brother Philip, tetrarch of Iturea, and the region of Trachonitis, and Lysanias, tetrarch of Abilene. Now, the word tetrarch literally in Latin refers to the ruler of a fourth part. That is, if you were to divide the nation up into four parts, then these were governors that were given a fourth of the nation to govern. It was divided up amongst them. So Herod and these other named people here were not the sole ruler of Galilee or the northern part of Israel. It was divided up amongst these rulers. But Pontius Pilate was the sole governor, Roman governor, over Judea, which was the lower part. So you might say, in a sense, that Pontius Pilate actually had a higher position than Herod, but it was in a different part of the country. So you can see that that here. Now, another interesting factoid that we have about Pilate and Herod, because both of these men come into play in Jesus' trial. So let's go over to Luke chapter 13 for just a moment. verses 1 and 2. This is sometime before Jesus' trial. There were present at that season some who told him, that is, told Jesus, about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices. And Jesus answered and said to them, do you suppose that these Galileans were worse sinners than all other Galileans because they suffered such things? I tell you no, but unless you repent, you will all likewise perish. Now, what's interesting about this is that Pilate, who's the governor of Judea, the lower portion of the nation of Israel, where Jerusalem was, he mingled the blood of Galileans with their sacrifices. Now, what this is referring to is an incident where some of the Galileans had come down to Jerusalem in Judea to bring their sacrifices during the time of the festival. They were the Jews, males were required to come to Jerusalem 3 times a year and offer up certain sacrifices and observe the festivals. Well, apparently a group of Galileans, Jewish people from Galilee, had come down and had caused some kind of a riot or an insurrection of some kind during the festivals at the temple. And so Pilate, being the governor of Judea, he put down this uprising, if you will, of Galileans by slaughtering them. And the expression that's used here is that Pilate mingled their blood with their sacrifices. So, the time when sacrifices are offered at the temple, there's a lot of blood being shed, and it's a bloody mess. In fact, they had to hose the pavement down on a daily basis because of all the blood from all the animals being killed. Well, when Pilate sent his guards in there and they killed these men, these Galileans, their blood was running down and mixing with the blood of the animal sacrifices that were being offered. So we know for sure that this occurred during one of the festivals when the sacrifices were being offered. Now the question then is, was Pilate unjust in this? Was Pilate just this cruel monster who just wanted to kill people, or were these Galileans actually doing something that was deserving of this kind of harsh response from the Roman governor of Judea. And I think, while the text doesn't say specifically, I think we can infer from it that the judgment on these men was just because of what they had done, these Galileans. And we don't know exactly what they did. But if you look at the response of Jesus, it's apparent that the consensus of the people was that these Galileans were wicked men and had done something deserving of this kind of treatment. Look what it says in verse 2. It says, Jesus answered and said to them, "Do you suppose that these Galileans were worse sinners than all other Galileans because they suffered such things?" And he says, "I tell you no, but unless you repent, you will likewise perish." That is, you're just as guilty as they were. So I think it's a mistake to infer from this passage that Pilate was his putting down this whatever this rebellion was too severe or too harsh. I think that's saying more than the text implies. All right, that's just my opinion on that. But anyway, now we know also that according to Luke chapter 23 verse 12. Well, in fact, let's look at that for just a moment. Go back to Luke 23, 12. It says, that very day Pilate and Herod, and this is after Pilate sends Jesus to Herod, which we'll read about in just a moment. But it says, that very day Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with each other. Now, Pilate being the governor of Judea and Herod being one of the governors of Galilee, had some kind of a problem with each other. They were not on good terms. And it's very possible, or maybe even likely, that the reason they were not on good terms was because of this incident that Luke referred to earlier of Pilate coming down hard on these Galileans who were in Jerusalem, and maybe Herod, who was actually the... they were part of Herod's jurisdiction, even though they were not in Galilee when this event occurred. Probably, or possibly, let's say, was the cause of this animosity between Pilate and Herod, these two Roman officials. But in any case, let's look at Jesus' trial before Pilate. Now, I want to go to John's Gospel. John actually gives us a fuller account of Jesus standing before Pilate and the dialogue that went on between Jesus and Pilate and so forth. So let's go over to John chapter 11 for just a moment. John 11, and we're going to start reading in verse 45. I'm sorry. Excuse me. This incident in John 11, we're gonna look at the fuller version of Jesus before Pilate in just a minute, which is in John 18. But this incident in John chapter 11 actually gives us a little bit of the behind-the-scenes reasoning of the Jewish Sanhedrin when they turned Jesus over to Pilate and fabricated their charges against Jesus that they were bringing before Pilate. This passage actually takes us back to some of the behind closed doors, you know, as Rush Limbaugh likes to say, the cigar smoke filled back room, you know, where the politicking was going on. The Sanhedrin, the Jewish Sanhedrin, they were formulating their reasoning and how they were going to handle Jesus before, when they presented him before the Romans. And this passage kind of gives us a little insight into their thinking. And I think this is important as we examine the charges that they brought against Jesus. So go back to John chapter 11, verse 45 for just a moment. Now this takes place immediately after Jesus had raised Lazarus from the dead. And there was a report of this that went back to the Jewish Sanhedrin. Here's what it says. Then many of the Jews who had come to Mary and had seen the things Jesus did believed in him. But some of them went away to the Pharisees and told them the things Jesus did. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered a council, now this is the Sanhedrin, and said, "What shall we do? For this man works many signs. If we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and nation, or our nation." And one of them, Caiaphas, being high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all, nor do you consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation should not perish." Now this he did not say on his own, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for that nation, and not for that nation only, but also that he would gather together in one the children of God who were scattered abroad. That's John's after-the-fact commentary, that what Caiaphas had said or had advised the Sanhedrin to do, which was, hey, let's have this Jesus crucified. It's expedient that one man should die instead of the whole nation be attacked by the Romans. That John interprets that as an actual prophecy by a very evil man. And the prophecy was that one man would die for all the people, which is exactly what Jesus did. But I want you to go back and notice again what this council said and what their concern was. Look at it again, verse 48. If we let him alone like this, that is all these miracles that he's doing, everyone will believe in him. Oh, okay, well they didn't believe, even though he did all these signs. But they're worried that everyone else is going to believe. And if other people believe, then what's going to happen? Look what it says. The Romans will come and take away both our place and nation. Our place and nation. Notice that. Our place. Our place. What place was that? Well, the Sanhedrin. These Pharisees, these chief priests and these Pharisees and scribes, this body of men, of Jews, were the descendants of this special ruling class. You see, back in Old Testament times, God had established David as the king of Israel. And of course, then his son Solomon, and then there was a succession of kings and so forth. The priesthood, as established under the law of Moses, were sort of like the Supreme Court of the land, but we had under David and the Davidic dynasty, we had this succession of kings. And so the king was essentially the secular authority over the nation of Israel. And the priesthood, the Levites, the tribe of Levi, they were sort of a different branch of the government, if you will, of Israel. So you have, they essentially had two branches of government. Well, after the Babylonian exile, when Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed Jerusalem, and he put an end to the Davidic dynasty of kings, Israel never had another king. And what happened was, most of you probably recall the story of Hanukkah, and how that the priests, the Maccabees and so forth, how they stood up against the Syrian king invasion and so forth, and they eventually threw off the Syrian oppression. And at that time, the priests, which the Maccabees were priests, they were a tribe, or part of the tribe of the priesthood, they sort of took over the role of both king and priest. And so we had what's called, after this, what was called the Hasmonean dynasty, which was these priests acting not only as priests, but also as kings. And this continued until the Romans came, and the Romans allowed it to continue under their sort of umbrella. So they put the Romans put their governors, you know, like Pilate, like Herod, in charge, sort of to kind of oversee and make sure everything, nothing got out of control. But they allowed these successors of the Maccabees, essentially, to continue to act as priest kings, but with certain limitations on them. And so that's what was going on at the time that Jesus was being accused. Now, notice what they were concerned about when they're having their behind closed doors, you know, meeting here about what are they going to do about Jesus, because the Romans are going to take notice that, you know, the people are believing on him. He's doing all these signs and wonders. And the Romans are going to come and they're going to take away our place and nation. And when they were concerned about their place, they were concerned about their own status as rulers, as priest kings under the Romans. This position of great power, great authority, and also great wealth. Because these priest kings were not, they were living large. By the way, they were living large on the people's dime, on the tithes and temple taxes that were coming in from the people of Israel. They were living large. In fact, the parable of the rich man and Lazarus depicts these people, this class, the Sanhedrin, this ruling class of the Jewish people, of the priesthood, who had taken upon themselves a greater responsibility and role than even the law of Moses had allowed them, and who were living large based on that. It portrayed them as this rich man in that story, and of the rich man and Lazarus. Anyway, that's a topic for another day. All right, but notice what was their concern again? That the Romans were going to come and take away their place, their position of authority and their power. And it says, and the nation, that is, you know, they were concerned about the whole nation. But really, if you look at the order of things they're concerned about, they're concerned about their own place before they're concerned about the nation. They were concerned about themselves. And so then, of course, Caiaphas, who was the high priest, he suggests that, oh, you know what, let's have Jesus killed, because it's expedient that one man should die and not, you know, the whole, all this other stuff come down and happened to us. Well, it's this kind of backfired, didn't it? Because we know that, according to history, 40 years later, the Romans did come, put an end to the Hasmonean dynasty. They destroyed the priesthood and the nation. They did all the things that they said that they were afraid of here. And according to Jesus, in his prophecies, this was because of their rejection of Christ, not because, I mean, they had it exactly backwards, didn't they? They thought if they had Jesus crucified, that would spare the nation. It was exactly the opposite. The Romans came and destroyed them because of that. Anyway, let's go over to Matthew chapter 27. What I want to show you is, when you look at this dialogue behind the scenes, that they're feigning concern for the whole nation of Israel, that the Romans are going to come and destroy them, but really it was about them and their own position of power. And that's pretty much plainly stated in Matthew. If you go to Matthew 27 for just a moment, it says, just one second, Matthew 27:18, this was when Jesus was before Pilate. It says, this is later, by the way, but it tells you even Pilate saw through the facade that they were throwing up in front of him. And it says, therefore, when they had gathered together, Pilate said to them, who do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ? And look at verse 18. It says, for he, that is Pilate, knew that they had handed him over because of envy. He understood. Pilate was not stupid. He understood that the Jewish Sanhedrin, whom he was sort of overseeing, that they did not have just cause for offering Jesus up to be crucified. He knew that. He knew that they were doing it because they were envious of him, and he knew that their charges were not legitimate, and that Jesus was no threat to the Roman emperor. He knew all that. Now, I want to go to John chapter 18. This is what I mentioned before. I want to go to John 18 because John gives us a fuller dialogue between Pontius Pilate and Jesus while these charges are being brought against him. John chapter 18, let's pick it up in verse 28. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the Praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the Praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Now, if you remember, this is going on Passover evening. Remember, Jesus ate the Passover with his disciples. Remember, Passover begins at sundown, right? So right after sundown, Jesus ate the Passover with his disciples. Then during the night, they went out to the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus was arrested. During the early hours of the morning, the Sanhedrin met, and they fabricated their charges. You know, they tried bringing witnesses, and they couldn't find two who agreed and all that. And then they got Jesus to claim that he had blasphemed because he said he was the Son of God. And so now they're taking him to the Romans early in the morning, probably before dawn. They get the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, out of bed to get him there. But it says that they did not, look what it says here, but they themselves did not go into the Praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. So if you remember, according to the law, the Passover meal had to be eaten, and the law specifically said not to let any of it remain until morning, that is, until the sun rose. So these men who had been convening the Sanhedrin were convening their Sanhedrin and bringing their false charges while they were supposed to be home with their families eating the Passover meal. But now here they are, it's getting close to dawn, and they got to hurry home and eat the Passover meal, you know, just to say that they were part of it, that they fulfilled the law. They had to hurry up and go do that before the sun rose so that they wouldn't be defiled. But yet, delivering up the Lamb of God to be crucified doesn't defile them? What hypocrisy. What hypocrisy this was. You know, it was all about the rituals and the external stuff, but inside, they were as corrupt as could be. So anyway, let's continue reading. It says, verse 29, Pilate then went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? And of course, this is a parallel to what we read in Luke earlier. Verse 30, they answered and said to him, if he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you. Then Pilate said to them, you take him and judge him according to your law. Therefore the Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke. Now this is commentary by John, verse 32, signifying by what death he should die. Verse 33, then Pilate entered the Praetorium again, called Jesus, and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Now we also read that in Luke's gospel, where he asked Jesus if he was the king of the Jews. Jesus answered him, are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done? Now, notice this. See, in Luke's account, all it says is Jesus answered in the affirmative. Yes, it's as you have said, I am the king of the Jews. But there's more dialogue that went on, as you can see here, right? First, Jesus says, where did you hear this from? And then, you know, Pilate answers him. And then Jesus clarifies, yes, he's the king of the Jews, but he clarifies that his kingdom is no threat to Rome at this time. And this is a very important verse in verse 36. Notice what he says. My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight. That is, we would use military force. If my kingdom was from this world, as the Roman kingdom is from this world, he says, then the way that I would have conducted myself and all of my followers would be to attack Rome with the sword, or to overthrow the Roman governors here, or I would have overthrown you. My servants would have pulled their swords out and come against you, Pontius Pilate, governor from Rome, He says, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. Now remember, Peter actually started to do that on his own when Jesus was arrested by the Jews. He pulled out his sword and he cut off the ear of one of the soldiers. But Jesus put the ear back on him, healed him, and he rebuked Peter, told him to put away his sword. Right? Now, it's clear, there's no doubt that that incident of Jesus' arrest, because there were Roman soldiers involved, that news had gotten back to Pontius Pilate, and that he had had Peter put away his sword, and that he had healed the Roman soldier's ear. And so Jesus, he's reminding Pontius Pilate, look, when I was arrested, we didn't fight against the soldiers. He says, if my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. Now it's a lot of people are confused by this passage. In fact, amillennialists claim that this passage teaches that Jesus is not going to set up a physical kingdom on the earth at all, and that his kingdom is sort of some heavenly dominion. You know, Jesus is in heaven, he rules from heaven, and so forth, and it's not about having an actual physical kingdom on the earth. Of course, that's contrary to Daniel's prophecy, clearly. But I want you to notice that Jesus does not deny that his kingdom is a physical, or will be a physical kingdom on the earth, reigning over the earth with him presently as king. He doesn't deny that. Notice the word of here is very important. It's not actually in the Greek, but it comes because of the use of the genitive case in the Greek. And it can mean of in the sense of possession. It can mean of in the sense of from. That is where the source of authority comes from. And that's the way it's being used here. How do I know that the sense is from? It's because Jesus uses the word from later in the verse. Look at this carefully. Look at Jesus' response carefully. My kingdom is not of, that is from. That is, the authority for his kingdom is not from here. Which is why, by the way, it's called the kingdom of heaven repeatedly in Matthew's gospel, because that's where the authority comes from. My kingdom is not of or from this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now, and I want you to underline, you need to underline the word now. This is a critical word in this passage. But now my kingdom is not from here. The source of the power is not coming from here. The time of the kingdom, when he is going to reign physically on the earth, is not now. Now my kingdom is not from here. Does that mean Jesus was saying that his kingdom is never going to be an earthly kingdom? No. He's saying it's not going to be a kingdom on earth now, at this time. Which means, Pontius Pilate, my kingdom is no threat to you, nor is my kingdom a threat to Tiberius Caesar back in Rome. It's no threat at all. All right, let's continue. Verse 37. Pilate therefore said to him, are you a king then? Jesus answered, you say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no fault in him at all. So we see clearly that Pilate understood from Jesus' comments about the nature of his kingdom and that it is not now from here. He understood that Jesus' kingdom And him being a king was no threat at all to the Roman governing of Judea and Israel at that time. It was certainly no threat to the Roman emperor. And so he says to the Jews, I find no fault in him at all. Remember, what was the reason why the Jews claimed that they were delivering Jesus over to the Romans to be sentenced to death? Was because they were saying essentially that he's a threat to Rome. He's a threat to Rome, and you know, the Romans, when they see this threat, they're going to come in here and destroy our nation, and they're going to take away our power and our position. And Pilate's saying, I'm sorry, but this is no threat at all. That's essentially what he's saying to the Jews. Now, Luke's account tells us something that neither Matthew, Mark, nor John mention at this point in Jesus' trial before Pilate. Luke tells us that Pilate actually tried to get out of this rather sticky situation that he was in, and how he did it. Let's go over to back to Luke chapter 23. In Luke 23, we left off reading before in verse 6. Let's go back to verse 5. And when they were the more fierce, saying, this is the Sanhedrin, he stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place. So now when Pilate heard of Galilee, or that Jesus had been up in Galilee preaching, he asked if the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, now remember, Jesus grew up in Nazareth, which is in Galilee, and so that was the jurisdiction of Herod. So since, even though the charges were being brought in Judea against Jesus' activity in Judea, he found out that, oh, some of this activity took place in Galilee, and oh, Jesus is from Galilee, I can get out of this, Pilate's thinking, by referring this case to Herod's jurisdiction. So as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at the time. Now, Herod, it says in verse 8, now when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he had desired for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him, and he hoped to see some miracle done by him. Now, if you go back to Luke chapter 9, for just a moment, you'll see that when this actually took place, where he was trying to see Jesus, Luke 9, verses 1 through 9, in the beginning of this, this is when Jesus gave the commission to his 12 disciples to go out and preach the first time, and they went about doing miracles and so forth. They went out throughout the towns, verse 6, so they departed and went through the towns, preaching the gospel and healing everywhere. Now, verse 7, now Herod the Tetrarch heard of all that was done by him, and he was perplexed, because it was said by some that John had risen from the dead, and by some that Elijah had appeared, and by others that one of the old prophets had risen again. So it wasn't now just Jesus out doing miracles. Now he's giving power to his disciples, and they're out doing miracles and healing the sick. And whoa, Herod's, he wants to see what in the world's going on. Verse 9, Herod said, John I have beheaded. Who is this of whom I hear such things? So he sought to see him. He's trying to get Jesus before him, but he wasn't able to do that until later, when he was accused before Pilate, and now Pilate decides he's going to send Jesus and this delegation of the Sanhedrin up to Herod to have Herod consider the case. All right, so let's go back to Luke chapter 23. In verse 8. Now when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he had desired for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him, and he hoped to see some miracle done by him. Then he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. Now, Jesus responded to Pilate, and he explained his kingdom, and that he was no threat to Rome or to Pilate's authority, but he didn't do that with Herod. Verse 10, and the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. Then Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him with a gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate. Now, there is a big difference here between Pilate and Herod. Pilate was, I think, a more serious man than Herod. Pilate understood what the Jews were trying to do. He got it. He understood. He understood that they were, as we read earlier, he understood that it was envy and that Jesus had done nothing worthy of death and that he was no threat to Rome or Rome's power at that time. But Herod was different. Herod just tried to make a mockery out of it. He saw Jesus and, so he has him arrayed in robes and mistreated and so forth in front of him. Verse 12, that very day, Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with each other. And that's because Pilate deferred to Herod and to judge the matter. And so that apparently went over well with Herod and healed whatever rift they had prior to that. Anyway, verse 13, then Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and rulers of the people, said to them, you have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I have found no fault in this man concerning those things of which you accuse him. No, neither did Herod, for I sent you back to him, and indeed nothing deserving of death has been done by him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For it was necessary for him to release one of them at the feast. Now we learn from the other Gospels that it was a tradition, as sort of a gesture by the Roman officials, that at the time of the Passover, they would release a prisoner, anyone that the Jewish people, they would have to choose one, and the Romans would release him, and so forth. And anyway, verse 18, they all cried out at once, saying, away with this man, and release to us Barabbas. Now Barabbas had been thrown in prison for a certain rebellion made in his city, and for murder. Pilate, therefore, wishing to release, by the way, we learn from the other Gospels that he was also a robber, a thief. He probably killed people and robbed them. Anyway, verse 20, Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus, again, called out to them. You know, all four Gospel accounts attempt to portray Pilate as really being railroaded himself. That is, he was not a wicked and vile man like Herod was, or like the Jews, the Sanhedrin, who were envious of Jesus and were betraying him or attempting to have him crucified because they envied him and they simply wanted to preserve their own positions. In all four Gospels, Pilate, on the other hand, is portrayed as being cornered into a situation that he did not want, and he was forced into decreeing Christ's death against his better judgment and against his own moral convictions. He was forced by the Jews to do that, and you'll see how that happened here in the next verses. Verse 20, Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus, again called out to them. But they shouted, crucify him, crucify him. Then he said to them the third time, why, what evil has he done? I have found no reason for death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go. But they were insistent, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified. And the voices of these men and of the chief priests prevailed. So Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they requested. And he released to them the one they requested, who for rebellion and murder had been thrown into prison and delivered Jesus to their will. Now, this is interesting. Actually, let's go over to John's Gospel. There's a little bit fuller description of this incident. John chapter 19, verse 1. So then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him, and the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe, and they said, Hail, King of the Jews, and they struck him with their hands. Now this is the soldiers. Pilate then went out again and said to them, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him." In other words, even while the Roman soldiers were abusing him, Pilate is still protesting that there's no reason, there's no legal grounds for Jesus to be crucified. Verse 5, "Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and purple robe, and Pilate said to them, 'Behold the man.'" Now, why do you think Pilate allowed Jesus to be beaten, a purple robe put on him, a crown of thorns beat into his brow? He allowed his soldiers to do that. And why do you think he did that? If he found no fault in him, why do you think he did that? What he was trying to do was publicly humiliate Jesus to appease the motivations of the Sanhedrin and to appease the crowds. In other words, look, this is enough. This is enough. Look, we beat him. We put a crown of thorns on him. We allowed him to be mocked publicly. And this should be enough punishment so that we don't have to actually put him to death. That's essentially what Pilate was trying to do by doing this. Now, it was also unjust, but Pilate knew that he had a riot on his hands here. And when you have a Roman governor who the emperor has put in charge of a certain area, a certain people, a certain nation, kept under control, and you're not doing your job, the emperor is going to come down on you. And that's what Pilate was afraid of. He was afraid of that he was going to be in trouble. Seriously. Verse 6. "Therefore, when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, 'Crucify him, crucify him.' Pilate said to them, 'You take him and crucify him. I find no fault in him.'" Pilate wouldn't do the deed. "The Jews answered him, 'We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God.'" Oh, now the truth is coming out. "Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was more afraid." He actually believed Jesus. "And went into the praetorium and said to Jesus, 'Where are you from?' But Jesus gave him no answer. Then Pilate said to him, 'Are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you?' Jesus answered, 'You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin.'" He was actually absolving Pilate somewhat of what he was about to do, which was to crucify Jesus. "From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, 'If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend.'" Now, see, they're really turning the heat up on Jesus, on Pilate at this point. They're saying, look, if you don't do what we want, that is to have this man crucified, we're going to go over your heads to Caesar. And you are going to be in trouble with Caesar because you are not protecting Caesar's interests because this man is a threat to Roman authority. That's essentially what they're saying. "Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." Wow. "When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover." And about the preparation day of the Passover means it's the first day of Passover, which was the preparation for the Sabbath, which was the following day. "Now it was the preparation day of the Passover, and about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, 'Behold your king.'" Now, the sixth hour, by the way, is 6 a.m. So we're talking, all this is going on in the wee hours of the morning, and we're just now approaching dawn. But they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Wow. We have no king? What about the Messiah that was prophesied all through the Old Testament scriptures? What about him? "We have no king but Caesar." That was their statement. "Then he delivered him to them to be crucified. So they took Jesus and led him away. And he, bearing his cross, went to the place called of a skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him, and two others with him, one on either side, and Jesus in the center. Now Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, quote, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. Then many of the Jews read this title, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and in Latin. Therefore the chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, do not write the King of the Jews, but he said, I am the King of the Jews. Pilate answered, what I have written, I have written. Wow. That's the story of Pilate. He was sort of the wrong man in the wrong place at the wrong time. To be governor here and to have to deal with this conspiracy against Jesus, but ultimately, in the end, if he actually served true justice, which was to release Jesus, he knew that his life, his neck, and his job was going to be in jeopardy with Rome for allowing this insurrection to just, you know, get out of control. And so he finally capitulated. One of the other gospels says that his wife actually sent a note to him during Jesus' trial saying, have nothing to do with this just man, because I had, you know, I saw some things in a dream about him this very night. And, you know, she was afraid, and Pilate was afraid. But in the end, Pilate chose to preserve his own status, his own job, and to allow this miscarriage of justice. We also learn from the Gospels that he then took a bowl of water, and he washed his hands in front of everyone and said, I am innocent of the blood of this just man. You see to it. You go crucify him. But by giving permission, he was part of it. You can see the struggle that went on with Pilate, but ultimately, he made the wrong decision. You know, in Peter's sermon in Acts chapter 2, he puts the blame for Jesus' crucifixion squarely in the hands of the Jewish people, not the Romans. The Romans were caught up in a situation, a political situation. Pilate was caught up in a political situation. But the real guilt was in those who devised this conspiracy against Jesus. But in Peter's sermon, he also goes on to say that God had predetermined that this would be done. He predetermined that those Jews by wicked hands would crucify Christ. Now, he didn't predetermine it by making them do something evil, but what he did was he put into power at this particular time, through the circumstances, men who had wicked hearts, because he knew what they would do in this circumstance, and they did exactly what God knew they would do, because God's plan ultimately was that his son would be crucified and rise again, because that's the only way that we could have redemption and the forgiveness of sins. Anyway, see you all next time. God bless.